With us on the Congressional Corner today, and we are very honored to have him here, is Senator Chris Murphy. Chris Murphy told us when he was a congressman and used to be on quite frequently, I'm coming back if I become senator, and sure enough, he has. You're a man of your word, Senator, and I very much appreciate it.
This is an easy one to keep, though. You know, this is fun. I enjoy talking to you, and glad to be back.
How come you're not running for president like everybody else is?
You know, there are other ways to be effective than to run for president. I know everybody thinks that the only way that you can make a difference in this world these days is to be part of the presidential circus. But for me, you know, I love being in the Senate. I think there's still a lot of really important work that needs to be done here. Whoever's president is going to have folks doing the heavy lifting on immigration reform and healthcare reform and changing our gun laws here in the Senate. And I hope that I can, you know, be one of those partners. You know, plus for me, you kind of have to have a fire in your belly to run for president. And I've got relatively young kids at home, and right now they're my priority.
I remember when you were on as a young congressman, so young, I don't think you were eligible to run for president. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right. I was elected to the House of Representatives in my early 30s.
Wow. Now, and you have to be 35, of course. And 35, when they came up with this law, was quite old. Now it's baby stuff.
When I was running for the U.S. Congress, I was, again, I think, you know, I'm 32 years old, and a commentator in Connecticut wrote a column suggesting a constitutional amendment to increase the ages of eligibility for the House, the Senate, and the presidency, making that point that, you know, what was 35 in the late 1700s would be the equivalent of, you know, 55 today, and that as a means of keeping out young whippersnappers like me who were, you know, completely unready to handle the affairs of state in Congress, we needed to increase the age. I'm glad we haven't done that.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I used to ask you regularly, when you could, will you run for president? And you used to talk about your young kids who were just being, you know, babies then. How old are they now?
They're 10 and 7. My wife works full time as well, is committed to her public service career. And, down the line, it'll be something that will interest us. But right now, I just love this job, and I just got the opportunity to sign up for another 6 years, winning my second term in 2018. So that's where my focus is, and I'm loving it.
What does your wife do?
So she is, she's spent her career in Connecticut as a legal aid attorney representing kids in juvenile justice disputes over school services. She now travels the country as a consultant working on making sort of improvements in school climate, make changes in state and local special education policies. So she's sort of doing national work on behalf of vulnerable kids, which is pretty fantastic.
Now, the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who has decided I should interview him every once in a while, he didn't talk to me for quite a few years, but now he's talking to Governor Lamont in Connecticut. Is that a good sign?
It is. You know, we obviously are interdependent. In Connecticut, we understand how much of our economy and our tax base is reliant on the health of the state of New York, but specifically the city of New York. And, you know, one of the things that the two of them have to talk about, and one of the projects that I'm engaged with Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand, is rebuilding the rail line that runs from Connecticut down through New York and New York City. And, you know, that commute from Connecticut to the city is getting longer every year, not shorter. And we can't solve that problem unless we're working together. So I think that's a great thing that, you know, we're having the two governors talking together, and we're doing the same thing at the Senate level.
And we have to wait for Governor Baker to get into the mix, because we here in Western Massachusetts are waiting to be able to take the train into New York City. And the best way would be through Connecticut.
Well, we have the Danbury line, which you know can easily be extended up to New Milford, and then run the length of Route 7, assuming that we get enough traffic in the first extension of the line. But you know, there's you know the old line from Field of Dreams: if you build it, they will come, and that is I think that applies aptly to rail. You can always make the claim that nobody will ride these lines, but you can't know that unless you build it. And I believe that if you put more service on the existing lines, if you extended some of the lines that right now end in the center of Connecticut, you would have plenty of ridership.
You've worked on background checks and, of course, on guns. And I know that you have created legislation, that you're very interested in it. And all I can say is without offending any atheists, God bless you for that, because because it's extraordinarily important. The president said he was for it, but seems to be backing down now that the NRA is putting the screws to him. What do you think?
Well, I've been through, this rodeo before. After the Parkland massacre, he invited a group of us over to the White House, let the TV cameras in, and in that meeting told myself and Dianne Feinstein and others that he was going to be supportive of background checks expansion, that he might even go further than that and support Senator Feinstein's bill to reimpose the ban on assault weapons. And then, as you mentioned, within about 24 hours, the NRA walked into his office and he did an about face. I talked to the president about 2 weeks ago. He called me when I was in Connecticut, and he told me that he was sincere this time about passing a bill to expand background checks. And he acknowledged that he didn't do what he said he was going to do after Parkland. So we're working with the White House right now. We're hopeful that they will engage this week with us on a process to try to get a background checks bill expansion that we can support on both sides of the aisle. But yes, I remain skeptical that he will follow through. We'll see.
And what about Mitch McConnell? Do you ever talk to the guy?
I do. In the end, Mitch McConnell is not going to confront the President of the United States on this issue, especially when 90% of his members' constituents support universal background checks. If the President gets on board with a background checks proposal, Mitch McConnell is not going to stand in its way, because he knows it's wildly politically popular and it would then have the support of the President. So this really is up to the White House. The White House can deliver a background checks bill that would make this country demonstrably safer, that would save thousands of lives. And as you said, the president would tell us that ultimately the NRA is going to win out. They spent a lot of money to get Donald Trump elected, and they're going to remind him of that. But for the time being, my one and only conversation with the president was one in which he told me he was going to pass a background checks bill. And so I'm going to do my best over the next couple of weeks to try to hold him to that conversation.
Well, everybody knows he's a liar. I hate to say this to a United States senator who has to do business with the guy, but how can you ever trust him?
Well, like I said, he told us that he was going to pass a background checks bill after Parkland, and he didn't do that. And as you mentioned, it sounds like he's already, starting to get a bit of cold feet on background checks. What I know is that this is a life or death issue for people in Connecticut and across this country. And so while I have the president's attention, I'm going to try to hold it. I understand the president lies a lot, that he says a lot of things that he doesn't end up following through on. But on this commitment, I have to try to hold him to it, because, while I don't savor the prospect of negotiating a piece of legislation with this White House, if it ends up saving lives, I feel like I have an obligation to do it.
You were there during Parkland. You know the great tragedy that occurred. Does it ever leave your mind?
Never. Especially, having young kids.
Sure.
I now am very close friends with many of the families from Sandy Hook. Those kids who survived the shooting in Parkland are in my office on a regular basis. There's almost not a day or two that goes by where I'm not having, some conversation with the survivor of a shooting, the mother or father of a young man or woman that's lost. And, it doesn't leave my mind, because even though the media tends to only pay attention to the mass shootings, every single day, 100 people are losing their lives from guns. And it only happens at that pace in this country only. So, you know, this is as emotional an issue as exists for me, which is why, you know, as distasteful as negotiating with this president may be to me, I feel like I have an obligation to do it if the opportunity presents itself.
Well, Senator Chris Murphy, I don't know how to thank you enough for being with us. You know, you said you would do it, you've done it, and when we come back the next time, I got lots more for you.
Great.